Hello everyone, this is Michael Dunlop from Income Diary, and today I'm with Bernadette Doyle, who runs ClientMagnets.com. When Bernadette Doyle discovered she was expecting her first child, she quickly realized that her old ways of making money were no longer viable. Trading time for money, traveling to client sites, and overnight stays had to go. She needed a new revenue model that would give her more time, freedom, and profits. Over the past 3 years, Bernadette has built a $1 million-plus business while working from home and running her business part-time while raising her two sons. Now Bernadette works just 3 days a week and has set up her business so she can work from anywhere in the world. This kind of freedom is available to you too when you master the business building strategies that Bernadette now teaches to other business owners. Welcome Bernadette to the call. Let's start with the first question. ClientMagnets.com is a great name for a website. How did you come up with it and what inspired you?
Do you know, this is very much a case of intuition really, because it was in 2001 when I was still making money as a corporate trainer and, funnily enough, teaching cold calling, but I knew I wanted to start doing something that was showing people the more magnetic ways that I was attracting business, the sort of more pull marketing rather than push marketing. And actually what happened was the phrase sort of entered my consciousness, and I just was aware of this idea, client magnets, and I thought, yeah, that's got to be the name for my website. So it literally did land in my brain from the sky.
It's a very powerful name. So what focuses on helping consultants, coaches, trainers, etc., get more sales and get more clients. Tell me, what's your biggest tip for anybody who wants to achieve that?
So my biggest piece of advice?
Yeah.
Well, the key thing that underlines everything that goes on in this is changing your mindset about what it takes to get business. If you look at how most self-employed people are, most small businesses are going about getting business, there's always some element of chasing. There's always some element of pushing. And, you know, a great analogy is if you look at dating, you know, the one night, you know, the one time you're desperate for a date on a Saturday night, that's the time it feels like you're sprayed with, you know, dating repellent.
Yeah.
And you know, men and women have noticed that, you know, sometimes finding a partner, it's a bit like waiting for a bus. You're waiting for a long time, then three come along at once. Well, my take on that is it's actually your energy. I think sometimes when we're desperate for something, we end up pushing it away. And it doesn't just apply to getting clients or, you know, meeting a partner. You know, if you ever lost your keys in your house, you know, you're hunting and hunting and hunting for the keys, and it's only the instant you stop looking that they suddenly turn up. So intuitively, a lot of us know that this works. You know, we've experienced it so many times in our life, and yet we don't apply it to business. So what I'm basically saying to people is if you can stop chasing and you take that chasing desperate energy out of what you're doing, you simultaneously become so much more attractive to potential clients, to people who can refer you business. And there's a whole new area of ease around what you're doing that makes people want to be with you. They want to work with you. They're drawn to you. So they're feeling that magnetic energy, if you like.
Fantastic advice. And what do you think is the most typical mistake small businesses make in trying to attract business to them?
Well, aside from that, about really getting caught up in chasing, what I see people doing a lot is they're applying techniques, but they have no strategy in place. And actually, this is one of the ways that I think I love the internet. The internet is very important for my business. It's helped my businesses. I've connected with a lot of, you know, powerful mentors via the internet. So I love the internet. But one of the downsides to the internet is it makes so much information available for free that what can happen is people get overloaded with information and ideas. So what you see is like people taking a piece of a technique and applying it, but without really looking at the big picture of their business. So that's why I think you see lots of people jumping on to blogs, for example, which I know you do, to Twitter, social media. But all of those things will just be busy work unless you have an underlying strategy. Like, I love Twitter, But Twitter, for me, I use it as a list-building tool. I use it to bring people into my funnel and then to market to them and make sales from them. And I see a lot of people spending hours on Twitter every day, but because they haven't actually thought through, well, what are the next steps? What am I aiming to do? What actually is going to be my specific process after someone connects with me on Twitter? How am I going to turn this into paying business? It just becomes very, very busy. So I think the biggest mistake I see small businesses make is getting very caught up in busy work because they're focusing at the level of technique and they need to stand back and go, what's my business about? What am I really trying to accomplish? And how can I design the most efficient processes to generate leads, to attract business, and then turn that interest into paying business?
That's great advice. Something I find with a lot of my personal students is they've always, you know, they've got information overload themselves. So that's great. So was Client Magnets your first business? How did you get started in client attraction?
It wasn't my first business. It was my first online business. But I actually started out, I was self-employed, probably before you were born, Michael. I was self-employed in 1996, and I previously worked in a sales role, and I started out I was actually opening new accounts in a telecoms company. And one of the things that I learned to do quite well, not willingly, because I wasn't good at it to start with, was I learned how to make a phone call that could generate an appointment. And in sales, this is like the holy grail. It's something that salespeople complain about a lot. They don't want to set their own appointments. They think telemarketers should do that for them. And a big job that a sales manager has with managing a team of field salespeople is making sure that they're out in the field in front of customers, because otherwise they're very expensive people to have on your team if they're not out there generating business. So because I got quite good at the cold calling side, I had some people approach me and say, would I show them my methods and my techniques for, you know, generating an appointment over the phone? And so that was my first business was born. And I was hoping that I could, what I really wanted to teach was NLP. I'd done a lot of neuro-linguistic programming training, and I was really fascinated by how that applied to sales. And I was really interested in teaching that. But my first lesson in business was that no one was buying that. So a sales manager wasn't waking up in the morning. This was 1996, going, I wonder where I can find an NLP trainer to train my sales team. But they were waking up saying, oh, my God, you know, the team aren't out on enough appointments. Or I've got John who sits in the office filing expenses and paperwork, but he's not actually picking up the phone. So I knew I had something to help those people, the sales managers. And I also knew I had something to help the salespeople, because ultimately salespeople don't like being unsuccessful. They want to have the business. They want to have the commission checks. They want to have the recognition and success. And I knew I had methods that they could use because I'd been there and done that. I knew, I understand where they were coming from. So what I did was more out of desperation than any clever planning on my part, was I just focused on cold calling. And over the next couple of years, I really built a name for myself as being a cold calling phone prospecting expert. I had lots and lots of clients come to me and seek me out because I'd established myself. And that was actually then what got me thinking about client magnets, because the irony was I had many people who were running small businesses come to me say, we want you to teach us cold calling. But I knew from my own experience running a small business, cold calling was not the most efficient method of acquiring new clients for a small business. And whilst I was quite happy to train it to corporates, because I knew for big companies it still makes sense for how they're set up, I knew that for the small business owner, the idea of spending lots of time on the phone cold calling, it does not make sense, not with all the other hats you have to wear in a small business. So I wanted to do something where I could share with people all of the other things I was doing to get new clients beyond picking up the phone and making cold calls. And that was why I started thinking about, you know, what I'd be putting into the client magnets package.
Great. And this is a slightly embarrassing question, I guess, but what has been your biggest business mistake and what did you learn from it?
Oh, my God, there's so many to choose from. Okay. The first big business mistake, that training business that I set up in 1996, the big mistake I had in that business was that my business model was wrong. And so I was the main salesperson. So I was the person going out and meeting clients and writing proposals and generating business. I was also the main person delivering my training. And I quickly hit the the sort of ceiling on my income, where there just weren't enough hours in the week for me to sell and follow up with every inquiry that we had coming in and also deliver the material. And so when I started to look to leverage, I tried to find trainers that could train my material. And that didn't really work out for me because a lot of how I teach is very personal. And I'm not saying it could never be done. I'm sure if I went back, I might be able to do this now. But at the time, I wasn't able to replicate myself that way. And one of the big learnings for me is I've really got into information marketing, and it's definitely how my client magnets business is set up, is I've learned how to package my expertise in manuals, in CDs, in teleseminars, in membership programs, so I can reach many more people, but without me physically having to be out on a client site all the time. So that, I would say that was my first biggest mistake, was just not having the correct business model. And what was happening in that was I had more and more and more overheads. I remember when I finally figured out, because of the staff I had and the office I was paying for me to go out working really hard, I remember thinking I was just like a hamster, and all the success I was having was just making my hamster wheel bigger and bigger and bigger. And I remember the turning point for me was when I figured out every month I've got to go out and generate £10,000 a month just to pay my staff costs, my office costs, and all of that. And that's before I take anything from the business, and it's before I make any profit. And I just thought, when I realized that, I just thought, no, I don't want it to be like this. So at that point, I made the decision to let go of staff. Some left of their own accord, but I totally scaled back the business. And that's when I really started looking online for how I could do more things online.
Wow, incredible. I guess the next question I should ask you, Bernadette, is one thing I have noticed about you is you're always educating yourself and expanding your knowledge, attending courses, workshops, and even a mastermind, which I had the pleasure of meeting you at back in September. Who is your most influential teacher, mentor, and what did you learn from them?
I have many mentors. Someone asked me the other day who my coach is, and I said, well, it's this person for systems, it's this person for team building, it's this person for mindset, and it's this person for overall marketing. Out of all the people I could mention, and I'm sure I'm going to have many more mentors, you know, as I continue to grow, but right now the person who springs to mind is who we were with at that mastermind where we met, and it's Yannick Silva. And I would say he's been influential to me for a couple of reasons. One, he's got amazing marketing. Like, that just goes without saying. So that, you know, that's the box that can be checked. But one of the reasons I wanted to work with him more closely is because, like me, he has a young family, and Yannick really values the balance of work and lifestyle. Like, I know he works hard. When he's working, he works hard, but he likes to take time off. He likes to do crazy things that I don't like to do, like jumping out of planes, but, you know, whatever floats your boat. And it's the way that he set up his business around his desired lifestyle. I mean, he's got a website called The Ultimate Internet Lifestyle, something like that. It's designed around his lifestyle as opposed to trying to fit in his lifestyle around his business. And that's a mindset shift primarily. And I remember some of the things I got when I first started working with Yannick, I realized how much I did in my business because I thought I had to do it that way. So I've moved now. I now live in Belfast, but I used to live in, you know, a pretty out of the way town in the southwest of Ireland called Ennis, which is near Shannon Airport. And it's a small town. There's only 30,000 people in it. There's only a few hotels. And so when I was planning my first 3-day event, which was a strategy I learned from Yannick, I just assumed I would need to do it in London because I thought, well, that's where the people are. That's where people were willing to come. I remember on a coaching call, Yannick said to me, well, where would you really like to do it? This is your event. You get to choose. And I remember as he was saying that, it was kind of like, really? You get to choose? You know, am I really allowed to do that? And he said, yeah, you should do it wherever you want it to do. And so I did it in my hometown. And I remember saying, you know, at the event, you know, I love the fact that I can be here doing an event and I can go home and tuck my baby into bed. Because at the time I only had one child. I could tuck my baby into bed. And you know, that was, it's such a small thing, but it was so huge for me. And I think with mentors, it's not just about the information they have that will benefit you. It's learning to think how they think. Because at that moment in time, I didn't think like that. I do much more now, and I teach my own clients to do it now. But at that point in time, that was his greatest gift to me, was helping me to see that I didn't have to do it the way I thought it had to be done. I could set business up and do it on my own terms.
That's incredible. Like you just mentioned, you have a young child.
I've got two. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Now.
A lot of the bloggers who follow my site are actually work-at-home mums or mothers who want to make some money online. Do you have any tips for managing the work and the challenges of life?
Yeah, I do, actually. Big shout-out to the mums, first of all, because, you know, there's... It's not easy. It's really not easy balancing family and work. But there are a couple of things that have helped me a lot. One is getting support. So very early on, my baby was only 4 months old, and I got myself an au pair. So we had someone who was living in, and she was a student. She was a young girl, so she wasn't like a nanny or anything like that, but she was hands-on help. But that was essential for me. Now, one of the first lessons I learned with that is I used to think that the times that she was looking after my child, I was obliged to be working. And it took me a while to realize, no, some of the time she was looking after my child, that was my time to go out and get my nails done or just go for a walk or go and read a book. And that was like, there was a guilt piece there for me to deal with, you know, that I was really allowed to do that. But I think it's essential. I've got a client at the moment who is also a mother with young children, and her husband works. And, you know, on our first coaching call, we were really, you know, mapping out what she needs in terms of her child care support. Because even though her children are young and babies do sleep and all of that, it's very hard to run a household and also have quality time to focus on your business. Mums in particular need rest. Yesterday I wanted to work on a marketing campaign, and I was tired, and I knew there was no point in me trying to do this marketing campaign. What I needed more than anything was sleep. And when you're running a business and you're putting a lot of creative energy into your business, people like us, we need more sleep than others. So I think that just that piece of about self-care and having the support in place has been really important to me. The other thing is about having boundaries, having clear distinctions between this is work time, this is family time. Now, not all mums need to do that. I know Carrie Wilkinson, who we was also at that mastermind with us, she's got 4 children, and she can be cooking the dinner and simultaneously on Twitter. I can't do that. I can't do that. I just had a great weekend off where I was a mum and I was with my children for that time, and there was no work going on. And now today's a work day and I'm back in my office and I'm working away. So I think having those clear boundaries in your time and also in your space. Like I work from home, but my office is right at the top of the house, and my children are kept, you know, in the downstairs room in the kitchens or whatever. So I'm not being constantly dragged into what's going on for them, because it really pulls my attention, you know, when I can hear them in the house.
No, I could imagine. So would you say that's what the internet lifestyle is all about? Just having the freedom to say, you know, make up your own rules and do what you want to do?
Well, not just the internet business. I mean, I think the internet has made it a lot more possible for many of us to do that. But that decision to set your own hours, to do business on your own terms, to set business up so it serves you, that's a mindset piece that you need in place before you even look at technology or what media you're going to attract, you're going to use to do that. But absolutely, once you have made that mindset shift, then, you know, the internet totally opens up, you know, so many possibilities. There's so much you can automate on the internet that wasn't possible before.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any suggestions on any good tools or resources people can use to actually automate their business, or any that you use at that?
Yeah, we've got there's someone I would recommend you follow, and her name is Beth Schneider, and her business is called Process Prodigy. And in fact, I'm doing a call with her early next year, because I want her to share with my people some of the amazing systematization processes she's shared with me. I mean, in terms of my blog, I've got a blog and it's updated daily, and I haven't written anything for that blog for a long, long time. That is totally automated. The articles for that blog come from interviews. In fact, there's a very good chance that this interview that we're doing now will be transcribed and turned into articles on my blog. And I've put a system in place where that's taken, one of my team people, she gets them transcribed, she gets them turned into articles. They're all checked that they're still in my voice, that something that I'm congruent with, that I would feel, you know, there are my words. They get uploaded to my blog in advance, and we also use TweetLater, which I think is now called Social Oomph. It's TweetLater when we're registered for it. And then we're able to set up a tweet going out every 4 hours about that particular blog post, so that we're catching people on all sides of the globe. Now that's been a big piece of automation for us, but the results have been absolutely huge, because I'll need to check the updated figures, but the last time I checked, we were up to 450 visitors every day to the blog, and we're only promoting it through Twitter. I haven't promoted it anywhere else. I'm not doing anything else to drive traffic to that blog.
That's incredible. And once you've got these visitors to your blog, how do you get them into your funnel?
Well, we are just adding to the blog a sliding pop-up. And I've always got something on the go in terms of teleseminars or free CDs, or we'll be offering something free. And then that will give people into the funnel. And attached to our free offer is a 30-day trial in my monthly continuity program. So that gives them a chance to get to know me. I've got a really great membership forum in my program, so I think people get caught up in the energy of the group very quickly. And then the idea is that, you know, from there, we retain them and we upsell them into events, to bigger programs, to our bigger coaching programs.
Sounds incredible. So one thing you have mentioned quite often is you like to do your own events. It's something a lot of people think about, and it's when it's starting, you know, you think, oh, this could be incredible, but doing a seminar is quite daunting. I understand you do more workshops than anything else. What would you say to anyone even thinking about doing an event like that?
Start small.
Yeah.
Start small. Most people who haven't promoted an event totally underestimate what it takes to get people into the room. So you might go to an event and you might look around the room, you'll go, wow, you know, there's hundreds of people here. You know, I could do this. You kind of multiply the registration fee by the bodies that are in the room. You go, oh, they're making some serious money. I'm sure, you know, I could do that. However, you know, learning how to fill the room is pretty advanced marketing, if you ask me. And I could talk about that, but I'm not going to go into that, because for the people who are listening to this call, it makes much more sense to do what I call boutique style events. My first events, I used to limit them to just 10 people. But of course, the beauty of that is when you say there are only 10 people, you have a scarcity, you know, that there aren't many spaces. So it forces people to make a decision to attend or not. But you also are able to charge a higher price point. So I personally think it makes much more sense to have 10 people paying £500 a time than it does to have 50 people paying £100 a time. So one of the things I would say, start small, but that doesn't mean your prices have to be low. Look at, if you've got any blog and you've got a regular following on your blog, there probably are already at least 5 or 10 people who would love to connect with you and get to know you better. So why not start with creating the offering for them, that then you're not going to have any real marketing costs, because you're offering it out and filling it with people who already know, like, and trust you. But you can still charge a more significant price point for that, so that can be a nice payday for you. You know, 500, what's that? That's £5,000.
That's incredible advice. One of the first sort of business advices my dad ever gave to me was you'd prefer to sell something for a lot more and sell a lot less, because it's a lot less, but you're still, you know. And that is something, you know, I definitely think a lot of people should consider, because, you know, time is money for a lot of people, and you need to get a good balance between work and your own time. So that's great advice. And what would you say if you could jump in a time machine, if it was possible, and go back and start all over again? What would you do different?
I'd love to do that. I'd have a lot more zeros in my bank account if I could do that. What would I do differently? Totally would have set up the business model totally differently. I mean, when I look back on my training business, I had 200 people a month coming on training workshops that I was doing around the, you know, around the country. And I can't even say it to you, Michael. I didn't have any continuity. Can you imagine all of those people every month who were taking my material, loving it, and I had no way of keeping an ongoing relationship with them. So definitely that's one big thing I would have changed. I would have added continuity to everything from the start. Yeah, that would be that. And actually, do you know what? That would have been enough.
Brilliant.
You wouldn't do anything else if you did that.
So you, one of the biggest things you use now for your business is continuity, especially with your mastermind group you have, I guess. But what would you have any advice to people who want or already have a continuity program to actually keep people? Because one of the biggest issues is obviously keeping people month after month.
Yeah, we've gone through a learning curve with this as well, because my first continuity program, I think about a year into it, I just had 11 regular people in it, and I was doing a call a month. It was the same amount of time for me as it is now with, you know, many hundreds of people in it. So one of the things we've learned about continuity, a big thing that we had was people dropping out of my program because they were saying there was too much information. So we started to put things in place to help people consume the information. So, for example, we had a forum, which is part of the program, and not everybody needs it. And to be honest, even if you don't use the forum, you can still get a lot of value from the way our program, from the way it's set up. But because we got sick of hearing the objection, oh, well, I'm not using the forum, therefore I shouldn't be in the program, we started doing something called the Forum Digest. And we have a print newsletter that goes out with our continuity group. And there's a page in it, which one of my assistants, the assistant that runs the group, she goes onto the forum once a month and she picks off like the best resources, the best tips, the best piece of advice, the best success stories. And we do like a forum, you know, digest. And so we've done a lot with our print newsletter to make it so that, you know, even if you only pick this up and you're reading it, you know, you're glancing at it while you're waiting for a meeting or something like that, you could still be getting a lot of value from this. So that's one of the big things that we've worked on.
No, that was sound advice. I really appreciated that. Okay, to end off this interview, I've got a few quick fire questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, what do you like most about the internet?
Oh, the freedom. Yeah, the freedom and convenience. But, you know, that's a double-edged sword, because it is something you can access from anywhere in the world. Then, you know, it can become a real burden. So I think you have to have limits. And I definitely, in my life, I have lots of unplugged time.
Great. And what do you like least about the internet?
Well, that kind of answered that question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know that question was coming.
That's all right. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Best advice I've ever been given. It's about charging more to less people. Makes for a much easier and nicer business, I think.
Brilliant. Definitely agree with that one. And who do you like? Oh, I've already more or less talked about it. But when you started your business, who did you want to model yourself on?
That's tricky, because someone who's... marketing advice I followed a lot is Dan Kennedy, and I still, you know, love Dan's programs, but you know, he very much targets a male audience, and one of the things that I've, you know, the sad thing is there weren't really that many female role models for me at that stage, or even now, dare I say it, which is a shame. So come on, work at home mums on your blogs, step up and get out there, start making some noise.
I'm glad you said that, because we have quite a good female following here, and women always commenting saying they want more from other women and more advice and just more of a presence. So that's great to hear. Okay, cool. So is there any last advice or anything you want to let my readers know about?
Yes, something I've been thinking about a lot recently, because I've been thinking it in relation to my own clients. If you want to have big success in your business, online, in your life, whatever it is that you're dreaming about, you've been hoping for, you've been visioning, what you've got to realize is the difference between someone who already has that and you is that you have stopped yourself in a place that they haven't. So, you know, maybe they went off on the seminar, or they invested, or they got the mentor, or they did it, and you didn't do that. Or maybe they decided in the early days of getting their business set up that they did need to burn a midnight oil, and you didn't do that. I can't be more specific without speaking to each person individually, but that's something for you to think about, is to look at, where are you stopping yourself? Because the truth is, if you're dreaming about it, you can have it. One of my favorite quotes is from Doreen Virtue that says, God doesn't give us our dreams without ability to make them happen. And if there's something you've been hoping for, absolutely it is yours for the taking. But you just have to figure out, if you don't have it yet, it's because you're stopping yourself at a place where someone who does already have that didn't. So figure that out, and that will be the key for you.
Wow, killer advice there. All right, thanks very much, Bernadette.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me, Michael.